music on WABC New York.
WABC, Danny Brown.
Go, go, go!
It is our wish that there will be no opening today.
Want to be one of those Caesar guys, remember? They come up.
It is our divine presence here which desires the nearby maidens to be brought forth.
Boy, could I have been decadent. It's the strictures of modern life and incipient poverty that keeps me from living the way I would like to if I could, you know, really get it on with complete power. Well, never mind. Enough fantasy. Back down to grubbing for a living. This Grand Funk Railroad, we're American bands. It's 3 minutes past three in the Ingram outrage. Ingram, yeah? I'm late Jim Croce. Bad, bad Leroy, what's your face? Yeah, woo. Ingram here on a Saturday with, believe it's 71, sunny WABC.
Well, there you go, Ray. Yeah. Grubbing for a living. How long have we been grubbing for a living?
A long time, thanks to Ingram, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, he was, I know he was you lived on the outskirts of New York, so you're a big fan of...
Well, my grandmother lived in Long Island, so yeah. The first radio memory is like being in the back of a 1967 Pontiac Safari, 100 degrees in traffic, and my brother and I, and just listening to this guy on the radio. Well, it turns out he was friends with my father, but I remember he was leading into Penny Lane, or actually coming out of Penny Lane, and that was pretty much when I realized that's what I would do.
Yeah.
And it turned out that was the only skill I had, so it worked out pretty well.
Well, he has a similar story. It was like 13 years old where he realized that's what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
And then did it. I love that he called it like the Ingram mess,
the
Ingram disaster, travesty, right?
Sure.
Yeah, I feel that way many days.
And when he came back to New York radio in 91, I was working in Mount Kisco.
Yep.
So I got a chance to hear every, he was on Saturdays and Sundays on CBS FM, 3 hours a show. And he was still good.
You know, and all those guys, I think Cousin Brucey may be the last one. Like those guys, that breed is gone.
Lundy is gone. Ron Lundy is gone. Yep. And the handoffs between Lundy and Ingram were always the best.
Yeah.
Kind of like the handoffs on this show.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Kemosabe. Only much, much better. Much better.
Mike Kemosabe.
That's right.
Yes. Well, Dan Ingram passed away at 83, and certainly a radio icon,
yeah,
and the best.
I'm going to listen to our air checks right now.
Excellent.
The hell with news, right?
Thanks, Ray. We'll be back with the roundtable panel right after this. Journey via strings. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning, 17 minutes past 9 o'clock, and a delight to have you with us, and hopefully you are having a good morning. Remember, for those of you in New York, it is primary day, so if you are in a contested primary district, go out and do something, right? It seems like a good plan.
And as our wonderful, esteemed member of the panel, Michael, has put it today, you don't go before 12 o'clock because in their wisdom, the great politicians in New York who really don't want you to vote.
In the New York City area, it opens earlier. It's open. The polls are open now. But upstate,
yeah,
which includes the 19th and the 21st districts, which touch into the capital region, one being John Faso of Kinderhook and the other Elise Stefanik of Willsboro, those polls don't open until noon.
So. Can you imagine?
You know, I would have normally I vote before I come to work, as I think most many people do.
And, not today, Joe.
It's difficult to do. It's difficult to do. But, well,
that
there you
right.
go.
That ain't is, right. that,
and people,
that ain't right.
people who have jobs that start later and have child care and have other issues are really going to have a difficult time getting out to the polls. That seems to be designed that way.
Of course it is.
Because you can't vote early and you can't vote by mail unless you're sick or out of town,
what'd
according
you say,
to the
accidentally
law.
On purpose, right?
Yeah, accidentally on purpose.
Well, let us greet the group here this morning. J.P. Miller is with us. He is the Empire Report, and we are thrilled that he is with us this Tuesday. Good morning, sir.
Morning, Joe.
I never get out of bed till I read the thing.
Yeah,
he
it's
has
pretty good.
Everything.
I forget what you had a good headline this morning. I forget what it was.
Well, Derek Jeter's
Derek Jeter mansion. That's right. Man, that's a picture. Good Lord. Wow. But if not him, who, right? Like, if you, who else is going to be able to afford
it? Just ask his number one fan, Ian Pickus.
Yeah, I mean, if he can't afford that, and he can't live, well, I guess now he's going to have to find somebody else, right?
Well, he got married last year, and yes. I think that that castle, if those walls could talk, they could probably tell a lot of stories about some great parties of the Yankee greats hanging out there. But someone else is going to be the owner, and it is a beautiful place if you're into that kind of thing.
Well, you know how they always, you know how they always give you the... They give you the estimated average mortgage on the house. I think right. It's like $60,000 a month.
Yeah.
At 14.75 million. Yeah, that's right.
Some might say it's a bit gaudy.
If you need to take out a mortgage like that, you can't afford to live there.
Yeah. And where is it exactly? Is it on Long Island?
Orange County.
Orange County.
Greenwood
okay.
Lake.
There you go. Well, Lakeview, raises the price right there. Mike Spain is with us, associate editor of the Times Union newspaper. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you with
Thank
us.
You.
And Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Hey, Joe. It's a great morning to be here. It's wonderful outside. Our friend Bill Diloff from Moonshine Holler died unexpectedly and cast a little bit of a pall over many of us who loved him and thought he was a great musician and a great individual. So we feel badly about that.
Well, indeed. And I was just looking here, trying to find an age, but I couldn't find it but right off the bat. But
yeah, he was a youngish man, no question.
Well, we, sorry to hear, right? And we're talking about Dan Ingram, and it's always sad when you have these greats that pass. The plan was to have Rosemary Armeo join us this morning from Amman, Jordan, and I announced that. So that was the killer right there. You knew the minute I announced it, man. So we're working on the phone connection. Hopefully at some point she will join us.
Isn't the King of Jordan here? Yeah. I think he was just here at the White House. House.
Yes. Yes.
He was greeted by the president.
Meeting
yes.
with the Great Orange.
So we are hoping that Rosemary will be able to be with us. And it usually just takes a few minutes to get the right line through and all of that.
Sure.
I know I talked to her this morning. When I say talked to her, I texted her and she was ready. So I think we just have to get the technology worked out, i.e., for her to pick up her phone. Okay. So we will start and hopefully she can catch up and we will get into it. By the way, just a reminder, tomorrow we are going to be talking about separating children at the U.S.-Mexican border. It's a WAMC roundtable panel community conversation that we'll be having live from 9 to 11 at the Linda. If you would like to be in the live studio audience, and why wouldn't you?
Just a few people left.
All you have to do is go to WAMC.org. The tickets are free. And bring your friends, bring your family, bring whoever you want to talk about this very important issue. We'll only be taking questions and comments from the floor. So if you want to be a part of the conversation, this is how you do it. It's WAMC.org, WAMC.org, and that'll be happening tomorrow from 9 to 11.
Breakfast.
Yeah, well, then we will have a continental breakfast.
The breakfast, yes. the one that I went was awesome.
Yeah, this will be a little bit different.
This is not that.
Modest.
Do you want me to be completely candid?
Crass.
Yeah, I'll be crass. So normally when people, we usually use these as paid events where people, but because yeah. it's free, we don't want to, we don't lose our shirts on
I got
it,
you
know what I mean?
I gotcha.
So
we'll throw you a roll.
Yeah, we'll have some pastry. We'll have some coffee. It'll be
Sounds
fine.
Sounds pretty good.
It'll be fine.
Do the
like,
continental.
Bigger than the Marriott, better than the Marriott,
yes.
maybe.
Yes.
Maybe not. I don't know. All right. So, and no disrespect to the folks at the Marriott. All right. Let us begin and talk about this subject, which, of course, is what we're going to be talking about tomorrow. And it is It continues, and it's trying to make sense of it is difficult, but border officials have suspended handing over migrant families to prosecutors. The nation's top border security official said Monday that his agency has temporarily stopped handing over migrant adults who crossed the Mexican border with children for prosecution, undercutting claims by other Trump administration officials that zero tolerance for illegal immigration is still in place. But the Commissioner of Customs and Border Protection said his agency and the Justice Department should agree on a policy where adults who bring their kids across the border who violate our laws and risk their lives at the border can be prosecuted without an extended separation from their children. Because Immigration and Customs Enforcement does not have enough detention space for the surge of families crossing the border, many families will be quickly released with a promise to return for a court hearing. This is the catch and release, quote unquote, that the president has railed against for so long. And apparently, in many places, we are back to that. So where have we gone over the last 2 weeks?
Well, first of all, Joe, once again, Trump has played to the base. It doesn't really matter what happened. What happened is he said, we can't tolerate this. These people are rapists. These people are, they're going to hurt us. They're going to come over the border. We can't stop it. He'll blame everybody. In fact, he's already blaming the Democrats for the fall of this thing. You know, nothing, as I've said so many times, nothing really means anything except when you analyze it in terms of the people, the handful of people who voted for him in the last time, which was less. In other words, he wouldn't be president if it was a total popular vote. That those are the people he's depending on to do it again.
But meanwhile, it's mass chaos at the border because nobody knows what to do. They don't know where to put these people. They don't know where there is what the president is tweeting. There's what the president is saying, and then there is what is actually able to happen on the ground. And that seems to be where the great disconnect is.
Yeah, I don't think the government was prepared to take in all of these people, obviously, and process them. I think that the government was surprised by the number of people coming over and the number of people that they would have had to detain. What they've been saying is that resources are being stretched between either A, defending the border, or B, maintaining the people that they've detained or captured or whatever word you want to use. But I do think that Trump is okay having illegal immigration being the top issue right now going into the midterms and going into 2020. And Trump, I think, believes that if 2018 and 2020 is a fight between being tougher on the border or being more compassionate with undocumented migrants, he thinks that he wins that battle.
Don't you think there's a bit of an irony here in that if you take the message that people outside the country who would like to come in are getting out of all of this, it may, in fact, increase the surge now that Trump has gone backwards on
it's
the issue.
So chaotic. The numbers were down for so long on the border, and now because of this perceived, well, real chaos, but the talk about it, there seems to be an upsurge.
Yeah, it seems like it's on hold. I guess that message might get down the line. Although I just don't know, the people who are leaving Honduras or El Salvador or Guatemala and making their way on foot very often through Mexico to get to the U.S. border, I mean, it isn't like they have their iPhones and they're listening and watching social media, hearing the latest. Their goal was established when they raised whatever money they could to get to the U.S., and they're not aware of this, and they're probably many, many, many of them, at least, are not sure what they're going to encounter, and so it's probably not the deterrent that it's intended to be.
You know, I'm going to respectfully disagree with you, sir.
Yeah,
I always respectfully disagree with you because you're one of the people I like the most in the world, you're smirking.
Still dead wrong.
You don't really believe that,
but wrong I am.
No, I think there's a way that these messages do get through. They get through one way or another. It's almost as if it comes through the atmosphere, but you may say they don't have cell phones. You may say, some of them do, by the way, have no cell phones. And all you really need is one person with a cell phone, you know, to sort of make the message go through.
But I think we're getting into the details here, weeds here, but people coming here, regardless of what happens to them when they get over the border, they at least believe it will be better than what's going on in their lives right now. And they're coming here to escape something that isn't good. So now if the word does get out that this whole zero tolerance policy is at least up in the air or suspended or something like that, whatever the case may be, although the administration officials are disagreeing with each other over this, it might might cause an upsurge.
Well, doesn't that just further the chaos too? I mean, it's one department doesn't know what the other department is doing. There's no communication between the two because one department is saying one thing, one department is saying the other thing, and there's the practicality of if we follow this edict from the president, we have to keep these people, and where do you put them?
Mm-hmm. Well, JP, you mentioned that the government officials obviously were not prepared for and didn't have facilities for all the people that are coming over. But it's not like they didn't know how many people were coming over. It just means the policy was implemented or ordered without the ability to implement it, causing chaos.
But you guys keep talking about the C word, the chaos word. And that, it seems to me, is what it's all about. Trump doesn't care about anything other than the establishment of chaos.
Well, that's what he wants to do. And it's, as JP, I think, absolutely is correct in pointing out, this kind of attention that we're giving this issue is perfectly fine with Trump because it rallies the xenophobics like himself. And it tends to scare people. Did you see last week he brought up all these people in at a podium who were victims, whose family members were victims of crimes committed by illegal immigrants? And it was just...
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome to our panel for this Tuesday morning. It's the 26th of June. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, and J.P. Miller. Just for those of you keeping score at home, we are trying to still get established contact, radio contact with Rosemary Armeo. We haven't given up the fight, but we're starting to. We'll give it a shot. Alan has some letters in the meantime.
All right, Joe, here we go. In Dutchess County, polls are open from 6 to 9, says Irene, reminding us that, as Mike said correctly, the further you go down towards New York, the longer the polls are open.
But you can't vote in the 19th congressional district in Dutchess County, since it doesn't include that.
The hottest, of course, election of all. There's a certain irony there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. And also, Teresa,
I'm sorry. That just stuck. So the entire congressional district has different voting hours?
Yeah. Yeah, the 19th, which is the
right.
Current incumbent is John Faso, the Republican.
So there's portions of so that complete district doesn't have the same voting hours.
No, it does. It does. Yeah. Below it, Dutchess County is below
I
that
see.
District.
Okay,
yeah.
I understand. All right.
And I would also say that the hottest race today is between incumbent Dan Donovan, who's a congressman who may get booted by a convicted felon, Michael Grimm.
It is so,
Staten Island.
It
yeah.
is so interesting. His new first name is Convicted Felon.
according
to the news.
And why not?
Right. Yeah.
And the president, of course, not wanting to lose that seat, has endorsed Donovan, even though the other guy is more like him. And so we'll have to see what happens there. It could well be that the president faces yet another rejection.
Well, it also shows that Staten Island is a very interesting place for those that haven't been there. And there was a news story the other day that showed that polls in Staten Island showed that in certain parts of Staten Island, convicted felon Michael Grimm is more popular than the Pope.
Fascinating.
In a heavily Catholic district.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, that was, all right.
He said he was targeted on tax evasion charges. That's what
he
said.
Yeah, and he didn't try to throw a reporter out off a balcony either. Yeah.
Okay. So Irene reminded us of that, and Teresa reminded us of that. And then we heard from Naomi, who writes the following letter. Well, Mr. Allen, you have mentioned a few dozen times that our president might find a reason to suspend the 2020 election. Well, he wants to ignore the Constitution now. Well, maybe not for the first time for him, but maybe this big step, that being depriving due process, may be the first step to your theory that he's heading toward doing away with the 2020 presidential election. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know that I've mentioned it a few dozen times. I have certainly speculated that this guy who has such love for dictators and presidents for life might like the same thing for himself.
He has said as much and then took it back and said, I was joking.
Sure.
Was that it for letters?
So far, so good, Joe.
Okay, excellent. So we've received word Rosemary is alive. She was at a press conference. They were announcing this protest against government action inspired by one of her stories, and she couldn't get back in time. She was stuck in traffic, but she is here now.
So we have to put our...
put your headphones on, and I'm not quite sure. Are we connected? Oh, okay, great.
People at home don't have to put their headphones
on,
just us.
No, they just turn on. That's a very good point.
Unless,
JP.
Of course, you have them.
That's right. If you're wearing your earbuds, then there you go. Well, nothing's changed. You're late.
I know. It's just like the old days, isn't it?
Yeah. I said during the break, you know, if you weren't in Jordan and you were just in Gilderland, we may have the same problem.
It's actually really true. I'm sorry to say, punctuality, I never got that as a virtue. Never.
Yeah. Well, it is beyond delightful to have you on the program, and we miss you.
I do have a good excuse, though, Joe. Reach, or Arab Reporters for Investigative Journalism, did a story, and it resulted today, that's where we were, at a press conference, in action, a protest against the government. Against bad action by the government. So, again, investigative reporting gets results. I'm a big proponent of it. We need more of it.
Well, yeah. So we've been talking, of course, about the immigration story this morning and the fact of whether we have a zero tolerance policy or not at this very moment. The gang here has weighed in. What do you make of it?
Well, I think that the policy is still in effect, and it's in abeyance as far as enforcing it, because he has to set up his RB camps to jail families for however long he's going to consider jailing them. So, yes, it's still a terrible policy. There's been no action by either the executive or the legislative branch to stop it. And the way the judiciary has been acting lately, at least at the highest levels, even if it goes to the Supreme Court, he may still have the right to do this. And in the meantime, our reputation is tarnished, and other countries like China and France are saying, hey, come to us. We want your Canada, too. Come to us. And so all of that fresh blood and new ideas and new that the loyalty of the convert to a new place is not going to come to the United States. It's going to go to our competitors.
Will it, or in the future will it, affect him politically / the Republicans politically?
Only in a good way. I think that is the thing that most discourages me, that most keeps me here. I don't want to come home. It isn't just Trump. I mean, he's just one lout. He'll come or go. I say that even worrying that he might stay longer than 8 years. But he will come and go. What's really the problem is that 41% of Americans support him, like what he's doing, defend what he's doing, and see it as good. And it's just not even people I recognize. I think his policies are cruel and ineffective, and they're going to end up hurting that 41%, and yet they continue to rally behind him. I even have trouble with the prevailing view that we must be civil to them and speak to them and find common ground. I don't see it. I'm like more discouraged than when I left.
I'm really glad you mentioned that, Rosemary. I agree with you. You know, here's Trump who says, take him out and beat him up and I'll pay for your legal defense. And now he's talking about the need for civility? Teacher, Tommy, hit me. Yep. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, I don't approve of what Maxine Waters did. I think that liberals do have the moral high ground here. They're right on every level and they don't have to stoop to things like that. But how come she's getting yelled at and Trump got more votes when he threatened to punch, I wish I could punch protesters,
well,
right?
But
what he said?
But Rosemary, don't you think that is part of his program of incipient racism? She's the perfect candidate to get leveled by him.
Yeah.
Because...
Very low IQ person. Yeah. I get it.
That's what he said of her.
I don't think it's incipient. Yes. I think it's blatant racism.
Well, it is. I agree with you. I'll take that back. I'll go from incipient to blatant.
Mm-hmm. It used to be incipient. I don't think we're ever free of it in the United States, but now it's okay to blast to blast blacks as stupid or ape-like, and prominent people are doing it. And yes, they may be slapped back a little bit, as Roseanne Barr was, but that 41% is holding solid. 90% of Republicans in the latest Gallup poll approve of Donald Trump.
Sure.
Oh my God.
So let's go back, if we can, for a moment there, Rosemary, to what you don't approve of about what Maxine Waters did. She said that, you know, I mean, what a lot of people are saying, resist. And you resist by letting them know in every way you can that what their positions are unacceptable. So what's so bad about what she did again?
Okay, here's why. I actually used to wonder if I ever ran across like Scott Pruitt or Ivanka Trump sitting on an airplane, would I have the courage of my convictions and say shame as I hiss it at them as I walked by or something? I'm not sure that I would have, because we're all brought up, or most of us are, except for the 40% deplorables, to be polite, to show your disagreement in better ways than by hissing at people. And Maxine Waters was inviting them to show disagreement in a way that does not make for good policymaking. I actually think the woman in the Red Hen restaurant was a little bit different. If you read the account of her and of her decision to kick out Sarah Huckabee, she really thought about it, and she didn't do it in a vulgar, mean way. She respectfully took her away. They did serve them cheese and drinks, and just said, you know, I just can't have this. So I think that measured, thoughtful resistance will win us more converts in the end. I think a whole lot of the 41%, not a whole lot of it, but some of that support just comes from, they're trying to protect Trump from us, from liberals who are so angry and resistant that we're doing things that are just rude, that we don't like him doing.
See, I don't know. When we take a look at Chuck Schumer, I think his attitude here has been disgraceful. The last thing that Schumer and that Pelosi and the other feckless Democrats should be doing right now is apologizing for Maxine Waters. Disgusting.
Okay, and Schumer has been annoying me for a long time. You do not get anywhere when you agree with Donald Trump on policies that are in dispute. Moving the capital, recognizing the capital of
China,
as a place to put in China, those are bad moves. His tariffs are terrible. So why? I wish he would just shut up rather than say, oh, yeah, he's right on this.
Now, I agree. No. Shut up,
John. Schumer has a different responsibility than the rest of us, but I don't want him hissing at people either. I just want him, to come up, which the Democrats have not yet, with a coherent policy saying vote for us because this is what you'll get. You'll get this on economy. You will get this on trade. You will get this on relations with North Korea. And where's Chuck Schumer with that? Sit down and write some white papers, Chuck.
Well, I don't agree. I think that we ought to be out there with our pots and pans and resisting in every way we can right now, because I see too many similarities about the way things are being done in this country, and things were done pre-Hitler and as he gained.
Well, I totally approve of all the comparisons with the Hitlerites in the early days. I think that's very apt. The Anne Frank Center has come out with it. We're not being crazy and extremist. There are things that will auto alert us. And maybe we have to resort that, but is now the right time to do it?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Why not now? A lot of people are asking about the old Hitler days, why there wasn't more resistance to what he was doing. If you don't do it now, I think you got a problem.
You know, I just can't disagree with you strongly, Alan, because you may be right. I keep remembering the old Chris Rock routine where he goes, I'm not saying it's right, but I understand.
Right, exactly. Let's take a break there. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Rosemary Armeo is with us. So is Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, and J.P. Miller. We will continue our conversation with you, the listener, right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. 11 minutes before 10 o'clock, we have Rosemary Armeo, J.P. Miller, and Mike Spain. Alan Chartok has a fistful of letters. He wishes it were dollars. It is just letters, and he begins reading them now.
Okay, here we go. Doreen contributes to this question of who votes where. And she says, please note that a part of Dutchess County is in the 19th Congressional District, and polls open there at 6 to 9. The rest of the 10 counties open at noon and remain open until 9 p.m. Now, this, let's assume that this is so. I have no reason to doubt it. It does raise an interesting question.
Well, that's what I was asking before,
Yeah. Right?
So now all voters then do not have the same time frame to vote in that congressional district.
That's right.
That was the question I was asking.
That's right, Joe, and you are so right. And some some counties then are more important than others because their votes count for more. They can vote more often.
So why wouldn't you work more heavily in that district?
Yeah.
And that's part of the district.
I stand corrected. A tiny portion of the 19th Congressional District, the John Faso District, is in Dutchess County. That district's been redrawn, and I apologize for having recalled the boundaries, but if most of the district and most of the population live where you can only vote noon to nine, it's just absurd.
It is.
Okay, so that's from Doreen. Thank you for that, Doreen. Raised an interesting question. And Marty says, in my humble opinion, Trump has overplayed his hand with the separation issue. While the policy may play well with his base, he needs more than his base for re-election. Actually, not. That's what worries me.
Why? He
won with that
in the
base
first place with not
in
more
those
than
three
base.
States with those 70,000 votes.
Just put on your headphones there, Alan.
Oh, did I do something
wrong? No, Rosemary was talking to you.
Oh, yeah.
Asking, she was asking for a clarification.
I'm asking Alan this. I'm saying, why would the letter writer say that? He got elected in the first place with no more than his base.
Yes, exactly. That's what I think. And that's the base that he is considering so crucial now. And that's why he's playing these rallies and why he's doing all this and why he doesn't give a damn about the rest of us, because he knows he's not going to win them over. It's that simple, right, Rosemary?
I think you're right, Alan, yes. Oh, my God, I'm agreeing with you too much.
Don't do that. Don't do that.
Wow.
It makes me nervous.
It's not good radio when you guys agree.
It makes me nervous when Rex does it.
Heart grow fonder.
It makes me crazy when Rex does it and when you do it. You know, we don't want that happening. Okay. Trump is over. Well, the policy may play well. His base needs more than his base for re-election. He won some undecideds in 2016, and that combined with a lack of turnout barely pushed him over the edge. The great majority of people do not like his policy, and it will absolutely backfire. Okay, anybody want to say anything?
I do think it was amazing that he got elected when he had a 37% approval rating. So if he has a 41% approval rating now, he could be right now at a much better place than he was when he was first elected. You also look at swing states. You know, he did win more than 300 electoral votes. He won Ohio by 8 points. He was the first Republican in a generation to win both Michigan and Pennsylvania. If the economy stays strong, he's going to be tough to beat.
Which, by the way, I want to recommend to everybody that you read the New York Times today, because there is an article about a potential looming recession-depression.
Yeah.
And one which has always been the statistic which has always proved correct, I think almost always or always proved correct, which is that when the relationship between short-term bonds and long-term bonds becomes inverse, that you get a recession-depression, and that may be coming. And I may have that all wrong, but I think I got that.
No,
right.
that was the article in the paper this morning. My question is when. Why? I mean, it sort of depends on when it affects people.
Yeah, sure.
Right?
It hasn't happened yet.
Right.
We don't have that inverse.
I think that Trump's policies will have bad effects on all of us, including his supporters, but they're off, and he'll be able to skirt them. I think the tariffs are going to hurt, but it isn't going to be tomorrow. And in the meantime, he's pointing to things like diplomatic advances. He talked to North Korea, and nobody else did that. The Supreme Court has been rendering one incredibly pro-conservative decision after another. He is to thank for that. His win is to thank for that. Unemployment is way down. It's like the gods are smiling on him. We're not, but the gods are. And I think he's a big contender for re-election.
And Rocco has said, please stop calling these people migrants. They are refugees seeking asylum here in the U.S. They are coming from countries that were subjected to leaders who were installed by the U.S. in the 1980s. So law enforcement officers learned their tactic from the School of Americas in Georgia. Our previous leaders created these dictatorships, and now we are having to suffer for the consequences of what was done in the 80s. And please do not say that the children were taken from their parents and put into detainment centers. They were kidnapped and placed into gulags. Rocco from Rosendale.
I think Rocco makes a really good point that the situation in Central America is the result of decades and decades of horrible U.S. foreign policy and the way that it has basically propped up the dictators in Central America. And now, as people flee these horrible places that we helped create, we should be welcoming them rather than imprisoning them.
Yeah, and regular contributor Bob says we shouldn't be surprised that more immigrants are coming across the border since Trump was elected. Just like gun sales ratchet up whenever there's a mass shooting because gun fanatics fear restrictions on gun purchases may be enacted, numerous migrants, I'm so sorry, are probably coming now because they expect to be much harder after Trump's wall goes up. That's Bob. Okay, and David says, immigration. Seems to me that lost in the conversations about immigration is the responsibility as we, as a people, bear for the various juntas and death squads American foreign policy has supported over the last 100 years, which is the root of people fleeing their homes. And that, by the way, is the second time we had that letter. And Richard says, correction, addition. I just heard mention of Trump bringing the parents of crime victims up on stage with them. I think there should be added that he gave each parent an over life-sized picture of their deceased family member with his signature on the bottom. I'm shaking my head in disbelief. Richard from Corinth. And Rosemary, if you have anything to say about any of these letters, I want you know that you're more than welcome to jump in.
Yes, I it's interesting. I thought getting away out of the country, I wouldn't know about this stuff. I'd be insulated a little bit, but no, I'm reading all this stuff. I have CNN on all the time, so I watched him giving his autographed pictures of dead kids to people here. Yeah.
And
just tarring all the migrant refugees coming in who have so enriched our country, and they don't commit crime in the same amounts as Native Americans. It's just all a big lie. How susceptible we are to propaganda, and how good he is at it. He went to like the Goebbels College, I think. Oh
yeah,
my God.
Goebbels College. I like it.
I mean, and here we work in journalism, and we cite New York Times and Washington Post, which are, you know, elaborately sourced and carefully vetted, and no one either reads it or believes it what they do read it. Instead, they're listening to him. It's just, maybe we should be uncivil.
Well, I think, I don't see why. I mean, I don't get that. Rosemary, you're so right. I mean, here's a guy who wants to take away people's health care. They want the kids to basically die, if you think about it for a second, because they're not going to get health care. And we're talking about civility? Give me a break.
I think it's wrong when Trump is incivil. I think it's disgusting when he's incivil. And I think it's tough when his opponents are incivil. I agree with Rosemary that the Democratic Party wants to keep the moral high ground. I saw a picture of Michelle Obama with her arm around Melania Trump. And I can't imagine that Michelle Obama was excited to have her arm around Melania Trump. But
did her jacket say?
Well, that, I really do care, yes.
that Michelle Obama quote of when they go low, we go high, I think that's a winning message for the Democratic
Party. It's a very difficult message to maintain, though. It is very difficult. It's right, but it's very difficult.
I do not agree with you people. I do not agree.
You think it is difficult?
No, I think it's called for that you have civil disobedience now, that you have anything you can fight with to fight what this guy is doing to this country.
I think
this is disgusting.
I think civil disobedience is excellent and encouraged, but uncivil disobedience might be bringing Trump's opposition down to Trump's level. And when you get in the mud with a pig, the pig wins, the pig loves it, and you lose.
And the pig got up
Trump
and slowly.
Trump is just bigger and better at it than all of us.
And the pig
from
got
the
up
he
and
was attacking Marco Rubio. No one ever out insulted him. He just comes off better. I mean, the one who was most unfair to me was Michelle Wolf, who is a comedian who went to the Correspondence Dinner. And how did she end up getting yelled at for being uncivil? That's her whole job.
Right, that's her profession.
Well, all right. It's too bad that you're all wrong.
Hold on.
Oh, sorry.
We're just going to take a break, and then we'll come back and be wrong some more. We'll be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok is here. Rosemary Armeo joins us via telephone. Mike Spain in studio, as is J.P. Miller. Good morning, and let's go to some letters, and then we'll move on.
But before we do, Joe, if I could just ask Rosemary one question. Your king was here yesterday. Well, maybe not your king, but the king of Jordan was here yesterday.
Mm-hmm. I heard about that.
And talking with the president. What was going on there? You got any insights for us?
Well, yeah, Jordan had very bad strikes a few weeks ago. People are revolting at the high price of taxes proposed, and food costs have gone up, fuel costs have gone up, and Jordan is basically in trouble. It has historically been the peacemaker in the Middle East. It kind of has been a lobby in between Israel and the Arab states, and now that Trump is buddy-buddy with Saudi Arabia and Netanyahu, that role is going away. So Saudi Arabia decreased its aid, the United States' position versus all the Arabs, and especially the Palestinians. The state is two-thirds Palestinian, are very much up in the air. So his country is in trouble. Those strikes showed that. He dumped the previous prime minister and put in a new guy, but there's still no money. So he needs to work out some deal. He needs to be involved in what's happening in the Middle East negotiations. And, of course, Jared Kushner's peace plan is slowly eking out. So we suspect it has to do with that. But he also has been trying to buddy up with the president before he was even president. He talked to him in New York about nuclear reactors in the Middle East. Oh, what could go wrong with that plan? And so I don't know. I'm not happy he's there. But we also had the prince from the crown prince from
Saudi Arabia.
Britain was also here playing around with the crown prince of Jordan. It's so fun when royalty plays.
But, all right, go ahead, Mike.
No, I just was going to point out that the royals in the UK don't get involved in politics at all, you know.
Not much.
Yeah.
And every time they do, they get clobbered for it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's pretty interesting. In Jordan, the king, fearful that Hillary Clinton was going to win, and she was so pro-Israel, that would not go well for Jordan, put in a new constitution. He pushed it through. He has immense powers. He can dismiss the whole parliament, for example. And so even though Hillary didn't win, as we all know, that constitution remained in effect. So he actually is more powerful than ever. But that's also made him politically vulnerable when things are going wrong. He gets blamed for it.
Yeah, but what you mentioned, this business of the 75% Palestinian, has always amazed me, that he's able to keep that, you know, that going. Is the people who his guards are those the Hashemite? Is that what we have heard?
Well, it's the royal family of the Hashemites.
Yeah. Right.
It's like the Windsors, you know, for England. It's Hashemite.
So. Yeah, right.
But it has a far less longevity than the Windsors or other royal families. And, you know, the fact is that politically they may not be as needed now as they have been in the past. Mm. And that ought to be concerned. Jordan has no real natural resources. It's a fake country, basically. It was set up, you know, only after World War II. And there's some thought here that the Trump plan, the Kushner plan, would be to make Jordan the state, and the Palestinian state, if there are two states.
Wow.
So. Wow, that's fascinating.
Wow, that's amazing. Okay, I'm going back to letters. Is that all right with you, Rosemary?
It is. I'll sit and be quiet.
No, I don't want you to be quiet. Mike says, Hitler. To compare Trump to Hitler is fear-mongering. We have too many checks and balances to ever allow anything like that. It's a sad day for NPR. Resorting to this kind of extreme bias does not represent a public radio station. It has turned into a Democratic propaganda machine. Well, Alan, who said that, has no apologies to make to you, Mike. In fact, quite the contrary, my feelings aren't all that good towards you. And I can tell you straight out, I didn't say he was Hitler. I said that the kind of thing where a man stands up, has a guy dragged out of a rally and says, "Beat him up and I'll pay for it," that's Hitler. So you can take it, put it wherever you like, Mike. And Daisy says,
I also have no apology. You are so right, Alan, really. We've been hearing this for a while that we're fear-mongering, but no less experts than the Anne Frank Center have said these comparisons are apt, and we ought to be paying attention. And as for those checks and balances, the people of Turkey thought they had them, too, and they're now about to enter a dictatorship.
That's
Our system is based on tradition and custom, and Trump has no problem stomping all over them. We ought to be concerned about it.
So Daisy writes to us. She writes to us frequently. The Democratic Party may not have a cohesive message, but many individual Democratic candidates are doing an amazing job at staying on message about the terrible tax cuts, health care, and other kitchen table issues. And that's from Daisy. Thank you, Daisy.
Yeah, I actually think they have a coherent policy. They have terrible public relations getting out what the policy is.
Yeah.
They have several policies.
Well, it is interesting to watch something like the John Faso race here, where you have seven candidates running in a primary. Is it seven? Seven candidates in a primary, most of whom are unknown to the public. So it's going to be very interesting to see.
That is a fascinating race, because some of them have raised, like Delgado has raised $2.3 million during the election cycle, and two others, Ryan and Flynn, have raised about $1.5 million each. I mean, there's big money going into this, and whoever emerges today as the winner of the election, it'll be very interesting to see the guns come in from all across the country to help them take this seat. And
you mean big guns?
Big guns, yeah. Yes. The big people. The big Democratic, names, et cetera. And John Faso will put up a good. He'll put up a very strong fight for his reelection. It'll be a very it'll get national attention.
I think it's by far the most competitive district in the state of New York, where there are a number of competitive districts, and the reason is that district, I think, went for Obama by 7 or 8 points, and then it went for Trump by 7 or 8 points. So it's truly a swing district.
Yeah, Democrats outnumber Republicans, but 26% of the voters in the 19th congressional district are unaffiliated, so they really will swing back and forth.
So the name of the game is to get those people to
turn out,
get off there.
And I do think that if you want to get some of the people that voted for Trump to vote for the Democrats, saying that the guy that they voted for is similar to Hitler might not be the best strategy.
I'll take that as criticism.
Claude? Yeah, I mean, it's like the fight of over being civil. It isn't a good tactic, perhaps, because it makes the other side so more defensive. But the letter was about whether it was an accurate comparison. And I would argue that it is an accurate comparison.
I think that right now Trump is not like Hitler. But the tactics that are going on mirror what was going on in Germany in the early 1930s as Hitler was rising to power. And I think that's what people say, we're dismissing democracy, et cetera. Well, as far as I know, some of the things Hitler did have not happened.
He's a racist demagogue.
And he says, when he says, I'm just, as Freud said, there is no joke. But when he said, these guys all have lifetime tenure, something I'd like, or something like that, there may be, I was just joking. Maybe not. There is no joke. And there you go. Claude says, fight fire with fire. Glad to hear Rosemary. I missed her. The problem with Democrats over the years is that they've been too, T-O-O, capitalized, civil, and meek, and in their actions and words over the years. Too often, they are generally gentlemen and gentlewomen. Instead, they need to fight fire with fire. That's from Claude in Albany. Claude, you're somebody to. It's Claude, but it could be a woman or a man. I think it's a man. You're a person to ride the river with, Claude. Thank you for that letter. And then Jill says, just say something. Okay, maybe the Democratic politicians don't have to stoop to the insulting, immature level of Trump and his minions. But for crying out loud, they need at least to respond to his lies and gross exaggerations with some kind of statements and repeat them in capitalism over and over again. Lies like how many Democrats want to open the borders and let criminals enter, or how they are pouring in capitalism into the U.S. by the millions. Being silent isn't cutting it. They need to say something in capital letters. And I have to say, where is Chuck right now? You know, where is Chuck? I mean, that's silliness. Okay. And Linda from Hurley says, glad to hear from Rosemary. What no one seems to understand is that the Republicans and Democrats have opposition personalities. If a Republican does something negative, all his fellow Republicans still support him. If a Democrat takes a negative action, her fellow Dems call her out. And that's from Linda in Hurley, where everybody keeps it down. And Julius says, civility? Dear panel, the abolitionist William Lloyd Garrison in the first issue of The Liberator said, with regard to criticism of the severity of his language, urge me not to use moderation in a cause like the present. He stated he would be as harsh as truth and as uncompromising as justice. And that's from our friend Julius. Sometimes
yeah, you know, the problem with incivility, though, is that it feels really good. I mean, I really liked it that Sarah got kicked out of the restaurant and that Miller got heckled, because they really deserve it. And that feels good, but it is not a tactic that works. We're seeing that in polls right today. So we have to delay gratification. I really do think that's true.
Michael says, the people in the USA are turning out on Saturday, June 30th. Americans demonstrating peacefully. Those of us who stick around and recognize our responsibility in a republic. That's from Mike. Okay, from Michael. All right. And then we heard from Charlie, who says, child hostages. President Trump has said the children the government took from their parents at the border can be reunited if the parents waive their legal rights and agree to immediate deportation. What a sad day in America when a president is holding children hostage. Free the child hostages. And Charlie and Wilbraham, where everybody owns a pig. And Jamie says, paranoid policy. Can we please stop talking as if this is a poor Eastern Mid-Eastern nation without a space or resources to extend a hand to people that are seeking asylum from political and social conditions that were created by our greed, our self-indulgence? Yes, please. Go ahead.
I would like to add that Jordan is a poor Middle Eastern country and has taken in a million Syrian refugees.
That's a very good point. The volume of people coming over the border is minuscule compared to, you know, the percentages going into a lot of European and Middle Eastern countries. And we do have the capacity. This is not an existential threat to the United States and the safety of people in the United States. And we're letting Trump get away with portraying it that way.
And so Jamie concludes his letter. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead, Rosemary.
No, I was gonna say, as part of the Trump incredibly effective propaganda machine, refugees or migrants, whatever we're going to call them, I agree that words matter, pouring over the borders, bringing in millions of criminals.
It's just not true.
None of that is true, and yet people really think it's true. The Democrats don't care about completely open borders. None of that is true.
No, Democrats are... believe it. They want secure borders. That's not the issue. The issue is the truth.
And Jamie concludes, if you also think that anything but this desperate conditions would make a person leave a home that they may have occupied for so many generations, they can't remember how long it was just to be abused by self-righteous Americans, then you're crazier than Trump. And Christian says, question, what is the law for someone who abuses children? And then... Dan says, Trump's megaphone. We all notice that when the going gets tough for Trump, he retreats to his base, rallies, and spews his hatred. Many people believe this causes his national polls to rise. But how can this happen when the number of people at these rallies is relatively small? I found out how it happens last night. And this morning, when I took a peek at the cable news stations, they all broadcast most of what he says at these bombastic rallies. So the cable news stations are, in essence, Trump's megaphone. And sometimes, I'm sad to say, the roundtable contributes to this. Another clever and insidious move by Trump. Yes, it's our fault. Trump is our fault.
There is new news that is out that the Supreme Court has upheld the Trump travel ban. There is not a lot of detail out because the decision was just released, but we do know that the Supreme Court has upheld the travel ban. I don't know the vote yet. I can assume, but I don't know.
Yeah, you're probably 5-4.
Right. Any thoughts on that, Rosemary?
Not surprised, but more depressing news. This is one of the most ideologically rigid and conservative courts we've seen in a long time, and they're taking major cases and siding against liberals. So
5-4, along partisan lines, with Chief Justice John Roberts writing for the conservative majority.
Yeah.
And by the way, because I remember during the election, I kept saying, what about the Supreme Court? You know?
Yeah, that was one of the issues that people did not understand how significant it was, and we're witnessing the result of the Trump appointee to the court.
Well, and by the way, here's the really bad news if you really want to get depressed, Rosemary. It ain't going to stop there. We got a bunch of older people on that court. And if you haven't seen the amazing RBG...
it's very good, I understand.
I saw it, and I loved it.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg and frankly, documentary.
Yeah. And frankly, I had tears in my eyes when I was watching it. She's amazing.
I want to get to, we have 2 minutes and hopefully one issue in us, and that is Harley Davidson. This is an interesting story for many reasons, but Harley Davidson blaming the EU tariffs said that they will move some production out of the U.S. The president, in response, has tweeted, "You'll be sorry."
Yeah, I think he's really upset because he had frequently championed Harley-Davidson as an all-American company making their products here in America, when in fact they already had gone overseas with, they make parts in Brazil and they make parts in Thailand, I believe. But in any event, he said, it's an American icon, and he posed with them outside the White House after he became president, but now they're forced to go overseas, they say, because of the Trump tariffs.
I wouldn't be surprised to see more companies do this. Companies like to have production near the consumer. Much of the reason why Toyota and BMW produce cars here. But yes, Trump is obviously upset by this. I could see him using this as an issue like the NFL, where he called out the NFL saying, you're un-American if you have these players kneel, and now the NFL has now adopted his position on it. I could see him bullying Harley-Davidson into potentially reversing their decision.
Mm. Do you think so?
Well, you would have never thought that the NFL
has gone along with Trump's plans before. After the tax cuts, they came and said, "Oh, this is what we're going to do with that money." So it's sort of karmic, and I would take glee in the fact that thousands of probably Trump supporters are going to lose their job. Except that hurts all of the United States, and it hurts my retirement and the stock market. And I think that we have a disastrous trade policy, a trade war in the making.
We are out of time.
No.
Yes. Rosemary, first to you. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll do it again very soon.
Thank you for having me. I miss you guys.
We miss you. Yeah. Are you coming this way anytime soon?
Have you had enough, in other words?
No, I would stay here. I feel like I have a haven here against the craziness in America, but I do have a mother back in Albany. So, yes, I'll be visiting, and, yes, I probably will be coming back sooner than I want to.
All right. Well, you know where we are.
Yes, thank you for calling me.
All right.
Bye,
well,
guys.
We'll talk to you soon. JP, thank you very much. Bye, Rosemary. Thank you, Mike. Good to have you here. And Alan, of course. A reminder, tomorrow's panel is going to be from 9 to 11, and we'll be talking about the separation of children at the U.S.-Mexican border. It's a community conversation. You are welcome to join us. WAMC.org. Tickets are free. You just have to sign up. You must RSVP. Doors will open at 8:30 if you already have. have those tickets. It's a will call, so you don't
tickets
really
going
have
fast.
A ticket, but you are going to be on the list. And we have an amazing panel. I think there are 11 panel members, so it'll be quite a group. And we look forward to having you in our audience. WAMC.org. We'll be right back.